Hey guys.
Welcome to another episode of Pew Time with Tony.
And Jackie.
And our guest, family man, farmer, grandmaster shooter, and member of Team Walter, and a buddy of mine, Jay Beal. What's up, man?
Hey. This is really cool. You guys have been doing this. How many episodes is this? Is this going to be 160-something?
162.
Yep.
Man, you guys have been doing this for a while. And I feel like anytime I get to be on a podcast, I feel really honored just to be a part of it, because I've listened to a ton of podcasts, and I've obviously listened to your guys' podcast for a while, and so it's always cool to be part of something that I feel like I know the people. Like and I'm sure you guys get that a lot, and anybody who does a podcast, you feel like you know them, though people don't really know you, because you're like, no one's listened to you talk for hours and hours, but I've listened to you guys talk for hours. So I don't know. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, dude, we're so happy to have you on. It's interesting, because we're still not used to people. We're so grateful that people actually want to listen to us bicker and talk about stuff.
Honestly, I'm so excited that, I mean, most wives can't say that they get an entire hour to talk to their husbands uninterrupted every week.
That is really cool. That is really cool. And I feel like, so I don't listen to every single podcast anymore, because it's too many and I can't keep it up. You know, it's just too much. But I feel like there are certain podcasts that are like safe to listen to, as in like, you're not like, it's funny. And I think that's the base of it. Like the Paracast is another one. That's a really good one. Like, funny. So you're like, you know what you get before you tune in, you know what you're going to get, and it's going to be funny. And it's going to be like, there's going to be little drops of some good stuff in there, but you know what you're going to get, and it's a safe listen, you know? So it's good. There's only a few that are like that.
I love listening to the Paracast. To me, and someone said this about our show, and it was the highest compliment I think we've ever gotten. Or there's like, I put your show on because I feel like I'm just sitting around after a match talking with my shooting buddies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how I feel when I listen to Paracast. To me, that's what that is. It's just easy listening. It's like I'm talking and listening to friends talk.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we want. I don't know. And I'm not going to say, I won't say podcast, but I don't want to be told what to do. I don't like that. And so some podcasts are like, you're like just jabbing at people, like, you're supposed to do this. I'm like, what are you like? It's not, that's not an easy listen. So,
yeah, no.
But anyway.
No. Well, we are really happy to have you on.
Yeah, it's been cool to meet you guys just a couple times at SHOT Show the last couple of years. And I guess that's been it, because I don't travel your way for matches that often. So,
it's the same. We don't really head out to the East Coast.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to think. I think I saw you guys at 2020 Factory Gun Nationals, but I didn't say hi for some reason. I was like, or you guys were just walking in the other direction and I had to go or something. I don't know what it was. But anyway, I think I saw you guys there, but we did not say hi.
So last year's SHOT Show, you were the highlight of my SHOT Show, because that was like my first exposure and experience to someone recognizing me that I had not met yet.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah. Wait,
2020, what? That was 2023.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember running you guys. So that was cool.
Yeah.
And recognizable too, because I follow you guys and watch your videos as much as I can. Obviously, Instagram messes up the algorithm badly.
So oh, yeah. Selective feeds.
Yeah. They really do that. So, but anyway, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up here in Maine, so I'm kind of in a small town, so I'm far away from a lot of stuff. I'm a person who likes to shoot, and I have a family and we got two kids, and I'm someone who just really likes to I don't know. I like to put a lot of attention into one thing, and that one thing has bounced around in the past. And then competition shooting has been that one thing that I put attention into for the longest. And I keep on coming back to it. You know, I think about it constantly. I've been thinking about it constantly for the past 6 or 7 years. And I don't know. It's very obsessive in that way. But I can get that way with anything. But anyway,
I'm curious. I know it's a shooting show, but what were some of the other things? Because you and I are kind of the same in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, just everything. So like, I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, I played when I was really young, I played guitar a lot for, I don't know, on and off from when I was 10 years old to when I graduated high school. I still play a little bit here and there, but I don't practice anymore necessarily. I kind of bounced in and out of this. Even last year, I was doing it a lot, but into Rubik's Cube, I don't go to competitions for that because I can only compete in one thing, but just solving Rubik's Cubes and kind of getting into that. And then bouncing around, my friend and I in high school would ride unicycles and stuff. And like, I don't know, just.
That's so cool.
Just random stuff that just seems really, oh, and then, oh man, foot bag or hacky sack, super into that. I mean, I would do that in high school for like 3 hours a day or more. I don't know. And I got like the special shoes and modified them so you could like bend your foot over and, you know, catch the bag on your foot nicely. but like obsessive about that stuff for a period of, you know, a few years. And then even, you know, I come back to that stuff every once in a while. And there's more things that I'm missing, but just stuff that seems really hard at first, but then you figure it out and you start to get better at it. And then I just really like that process of learning. And I think that's what it is. Yeah.
Seems like you have one of those, I don't remember what the term is, but it's like working brain. In order to be calm, you need to be like working and focused on something.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. What are some other things that you, just really quick, because I'm curious.
Well, racing. I've been obsessed with racing forever.
Mm-hmm.
So did you race?
I raced rallycross for a while.
Oh, cool.
Acting and stand-up. I did stand-up comedy for a while.
Awesome.
I did that to, I mean, technically I was a professional comedian. I did that to where I started getting paid for it.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's always been something along those lines. And I've done martial arts. I did a lot of like grappling, like jujitsu before jujitsu was really cool.
Yeah.
It was just grappling at that time.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It's funny how that works out. I honestly really thought it was going to be most people that I see in the sport. And this is how I see you differently. Most people come from a competitive background. Like racing is very competitive. There's a lot of people that come from a racing background in the shooting world. But you, even the way you came in, and we'll get into this a little bit. I don't want to say Jay Beal came out of nowhere, but most people started to recognize you. Like, who is this guy and where did he come from? And to me, it's a different approach. You were competitive, not because you really thrive off the competition. Although I think deep down you enjoy competition.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But I think you got so good so fast because of like what you were talking about. The details are what capture you. Like you grind and work on that. And competitors, hate to say it, most of them, the competition comes first. Then they like, how do I get better? I think you were opposite. I think you were like, how do I get good? And you just started beating people. And then you had got to a level where you're like, oh, I have to do both.
Yeah. No, I've never thought about it that way, but I feel like that's probably pretty accurate. Yeah. That's very interesting. Yeah. I'm super competitive, but also at the same time, that wasn't why I decided to do this. You know, it was just because you know, I just, because of that reason, what that whole thing you're talking about is just, I like to figure something out that I can't do. And then when I figure it out, I'm thinking about how do I optimize that thing and make it like the best that it could possibly can be for myself. And then obviously in shooting the way, so one of the other things that I did a long time ago was I played RuneScape for a long time when I was younger. And I don't know if you guys know what RuneScape is, but it's an online game. And
it's the computer game.
The computer game RuneScape.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like endless in what you can do. And like, even if you get, you know, 99 in a level, you can still get more XP on top of that. And so anyway, I look at shooting not in the same way because it's totally different, but it's like there's always something to optimize. And as soon as you know, if you let off on one thing and go and focus on another thing, then you're always going to have to come back to that. And I don't know, it's very endless in that way. And then the next best part about it is that there's no perfect score, at least with hit factor scoring. There's no perfect, you can always go faster. And I don't know, I think that that's what's kept me in it, just because it's such a, like, the scoring is very, very interesting.
Yes. It's one of the few times that I look at scoring and it isn't perfect, but it is almost.
Yes, really.
As far as how we're judged on it. Like, it's almost perfect for what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is. It's amazing.
So, how long have you been shooting?
I shot my first USPSA match in fall of 2017. So this is like six, I think it's going to be going on 7 years. I shot an outlaw match in 2016. And I thought the club I went to, I thought they only did it once a year. So I was like, oh, cool, I guess I'll come back in a year. I thought it was like, would they actually? I feel kind of silly about that because that would have been cool to go back to a match. But I shot like one match there. And then, but yeah, it's been like 6 or 7 years almost.
When did you start taking it serious?
Before I started.
Point. Yeah. Case in point.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, yeah, go ahead.
Were you into guns before you started competing?
Yeah. Yeah, I was. I'm trying to think. Like, I had gotten an AR or something like that, and then I got a Beretta 92 A1.
Man with class.
And I would shoot that a little bit. Didn't do any dry fire with it. I ended up selling it. And then, I don't know, I got a Glock or something like that. And then at that point, I was thinking about, like, carrying more. And I was like, well, if I'm going to carry this, I probably should, like, know how to hit stuff and be able to be safe. And then that goes down a whole thing of listening to podcasts and then people, someone said, I think it was Scott Jedlinski or Tim Heron, or I think it was Scott, said, like, on a podcast somewhere, that if you want to get really good, then you have to compete. And I was like, cool, how do I do that? and so then I looked it up or whatever, and I started practicing for that before I went to my first match.
Yeah, it's amazing. I want people to take note. Everyone thinks, and this is not going to get political, I promise you, but everyone thinks that if we lived in a society where people could just carry a gun because it's their right, it would be mass chaos. And I tell people all the time, there's an inherent personal responsibility people feel. Yeah. And you'll see that with most shooters. Most shooters and most avid concealed carriers will say, yes, I was carrying a gun because I needed it or felt that I needed it. And eventually they go, and then I was sneaking out training. Yeah. I wanted to seek out the training because I needed to know more about it. I needed to be proficient with it. It happens regardless. It, no matter what, it may take a little longer for some people, but they will seek out training.
Yeah. Yeah. In some form, in some kind of way, they'll look for
whether
something.
Whether it's YouTube, podcasts, yeah. books, Instagram, whatever it is, they're going to seek out something that explains the thing they carry every day to protect themselves better at it.
Yeah.
They're going to seek something.
Yeah, because people realize they know, or people should know. I mean, they're like, well, this is, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with this. And so I better be good with it, or like competent with it. And I think that that's incredibly important. Yeah.
Yeah. I think people try and pin it on like everyone should have to go through a class. Well, no, they shouldn't, but I agree with you. People should learn more, and we should make that learning easily accessible, because then people would do it more.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and that's where you're seeing it is like, even with your training, I will peg you as probably one of the highlighted shooters of the era of shooting that we were in right after information became available. To me, you're one of the handful of shooters that went from none to GM high level, gonna win areas and sectionals very quickly. You're that new breed that came in with, we have the information out there now. It's accessible. Do you know how to apply it to yourself to get better? And then it takes someone like you to show people, yeah, you can get really good really quick.
Yeah. Like if there was a, and I always joke about this with a friend of mine too, who we shoot matches together, but if there was a selection on Practice Score where you could select pure skill, like who has the best skill, just straight up, and take anything else out of it, and then like toggle that, you would have different people winning. Like you would have, because everybody, like a lot of people have a very, very high end skill, and they've got it really quick. And that, and maybe that's always happened. I don't know, but I think you're onto it where that wasn't always the case, but, it's very simple. Like the process is simple to get the best gun handling skills in the world. Like you can do that very quickly. Yeah. But using that and getting as close as you can to that, and I'm talking gun handling, I'm just talking about overall USPSA or hit factor skills. You can, getting that at a match on demand is the difficult part, or like the elusive part for a lot of people.
I think that's where people start to lose, like for you, and that kind of goes back to what I said, you got good first. It's the competitor part that is the missing piece for some people. There's an art to learning and knowing how to compete.
Yeah.
Not just do well.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's a lot of mental game, which we'll talk about. You've done quite a bit, I would say, of mental game training.
Yeah. I mean, it's all the time. Every single thing we do. Yeah. Is mental training. Yeah. And obviously, I mean, I should thank Steve Anderson in this, because Steve's not going to listen to this podcast, but but that's not what it's for. It's for people who are like, that was very early on. It was like Scott Jedlinski said, go compete, but also listen to Steve Anderson's podcast. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. And so Steve has like all the mental training, and that was like from the beginning part of what I was thinking. So when I was physically training, I was also mentally training. And I don't know, it's so hard to explain, but like whenever you're doing anything and you're putting yourself kind of mentally in a place where you're thinking, how would this work? Like if I was at a match, and how would I feel if I was at a match? And then you're kind of always in that mindset, I guess. I don't know. That's just one way of explaining the same thing, but I don't know. Anyway.
I think it's you putting yourself, you're self-aware enough to put yourself into how do I feel at matches, but during practice.
Yeah.
And it's hard for people to do that.
Yeah. It's really hard to do that. Yeah. And I think it's like hard to replicate it. And I don't think you can perfectly, which is where you get into some other stuff, but at least knowing how you might feel is just good in general. Yeah. Like I feel this way. And then allow yourself to feel that.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting to see that because really most people, I just called my buddy out on the other day. I was like, have you been practicing or have you been draw firing? He's like, you mean dry fire? I was like, no, draw firing. I was like, what does your dry fire look like? Do you just draw and present to a target and press the trigger? He's like, well, yeah. I was like, that's draw firing, dude. That's not dry fire.
Draw fire. Like,
because that's all you're doing. And he has an amazing appendix draw, like amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it comes time, we go to a live fire practice and you show me that you can't do a consistent good doubles target or you can't run a stage without losing your mind or forgetting what targets are where, right? Yeah. You need to change up your practice. Like your draw is good.
Like yeah. If I'm doing dry fire with the multiple targets, I will do a walkthrough in the house just like I would on a stage. I touch my hand to the side of the holster in the same spot I touch it to at a match. I have the same breathing regimen during my make ready, like everything to like try to replicate it as much as possible.
Yeah. And I'm sure whenever you want to make a change to that like system that you have for getting ready to shoot a stage, then you'll practice that change. Like, yeah. You know, if you're going to shoot IPSC and you have to take away the sight picture part, then you practice that. Or you should, if that's what you're doing, you know? And like, yeah, exactly, with that rehearsal part. It's it's huge.
Yeah. Makes watching me try and get used to an open holster from years and years of a bucket. What, I shot a bucket holster since 2008. When I started working carrying a holster at work. And so since 2008, it's been bucket holster only. And then I shot open for a year or so. And that, I can't tell you how many times I didn't unlock my holster at the make ready. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there yanking on this thing and yanking on it after the buzzer. And I'm like, the time is just going. What's wrong with my holster? And I'm like, unlock it.
Yeah. No, just that little stuff. Like I was using a race holster for the past couple months, I guess. Obviously I haven't shot a match in a little bit, but and just getting used to that's totally different. Now I'm back to a bucket holster. So I don't know. It's just little things make a big difference. And then once you use them and then it's fine and it's pretty easy to adjust, but.
Yeah, speaking of changing up the make ready, I changed mine, and it was for a stupid reason, because I planned to go shoot some IPSC with my buddy Eric.
Yeah.
At some point. And the whole sight picture thing gets thrown into my head, where you can't have a sight picture. You can check to see if your dot's on, but it's got to be like pointed to the ground.
Yeah.
So I've completely thrown out the sight picture on my make ready. Like, I just don't do it anymore.
No.
Like I load the gun, dots on, load it, put it back in my holster right away.
Yeah.
And it's just become so much less like stressful. Like, what am I doing? Let me check this. Let me go through the stage one more time. It's like, nah, I've done my walkthrough. I know what I'm doing. Load the gun, throw it in the holster. Let's go.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. You've already done the prep work. So it's not like it's a change, but if you're so used to doing the other thing, then it's different. And then once you get that, you're like, well, this is totally fine. And yeah, I like how you mentioned Eric because Eric and I have only exchanged a couple messages back and forth, but he was one of those guys that I was watching on Instagram really early on. And I was watching his dry fire stuff. And I know obviously he would shoot, you know, matches and things like that, but I was watching his dry fire stuff because he was someone who was like trying to make GM. And I remember watching, it was like, I was trying to make GM too. And I was watching him do it. And that was really cool. And so he was a big inspiration for a lot of stuff. And so I don't know, it's always cool that, and I'm so glad like he's still shooting. Like so many people that I used to follow just are done. And so it's always good to see Eric still shooting.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't understand the fall off. I mean, I understand there's cycles and everything.
Yeah.
But it seems to be a lot of people, the GM is the goal, and once they get that, I don't know if they don't want to put in the work now required to actually win, or they feel like they've just accomplished the goal and they're done.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, if you don't have a goal set up behind it, which is, this is mental management stuff, but if you don't have a goal set up behind whatever the goal is, and you make that goal, then you don't, like, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be like, I'm going to make GM, but also I'm going to, at the very least, not stop. And so I don't know, but that could be it. I don't know. It's expensive too. I don't know. I don't know the reason for a lot of, I don't understand it. And so that's why it's confusing to me.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's fine. It's okay. No, not everybody has to do this. But...
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing.
Yes, they do.
I know, so I have to do that. I try my best not to talk everyone into going and shooting a competition. I fail a lot at that.
Yeah. Kind of made a career of bringing new shooters to almost every match.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, at work, I'm the girl who shoots competitions, so I get a lot of questions and send a lot of people to ranges to, at the very least, watch a USPSA match. Like, you're not confident enough and ready enough and have the gear, just stop in one night and see what it's all about.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people stick around till the end and then sign up for a class or want to get into it and, hey, where can I get my gear?
It's super cool. And I mean, competition in anything is so important for developing, like, not only equipment, but developing, like, just how to do certain things. I mean, in racing, it's super important.
Well, and, how to do it more efficiently.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what's the best way to do this? Well, I don't know. We have targets and we have a timer. Like, let's figure it out. And so, it's like, if there wasn't competition, then no one, I don't know, you'd be just stuck. And obviously we see people who are stuck, and it's kind of embarrassing sometimes because you're like, well, come on, man. Hey, there's stuff going on right now. People are getting really good for this reason. And anyway.
Yeah, I had a talk with a buddy of mine who we kind of started about the same time, and he's kind of petered off a little bit. And he was telling me, he's like, man, this new breed of shooters. I was like, listen, dude, while the more of the information is out there, yes, but it is the time, like the amount of time they're willing to focus to do it, yeah. Whether it's they don't have a family or they have a stay-at-home job, whatever it is. Somewhere they still have to make a sacrifice to do it and are okay with that. Yeah. You are not.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But just he was in that position where he was really mad and would really be angry at himself for not doing well at a match. But on the other hand, I'm like, you don't practice.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have the right to be mad at yourself.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know this person, but yeah, you have to earn what you, or whatever I'm trying to say. You guys know what I'm trying to say. You earn in training what you're, I'm very much lost on how to say this. You might have to help me. Whatever you just said, you have to practice to get better and then get better match results.
Right.
You win on the range what you practice in training, essentially.
Yeah. That's much, much cleaner.
Yeah, I used to be that person. It took my buddy Max to say exactly what I just said. I'd be like, man, I should have shot that stage better. He goes, yeah, probably. How much you been dry firing? I'm like, I haven't. He goes, yeah, nothing to complain about.
Yeah, it's totally fine then.
I was like, huh. Okay. I guess if I want to complain, I should dry fire. And if I dry fire, I probably won't complain as much.
No.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's about how it goes.
Speaking of dry fire, man, you are, in most people's eyes, the dry fire king. And I'm not talking about the dope YouTube channel that people use for dry fire. I mean, you have an entire
little mini cult following.
Well, you have a cult following for dry fire guys, but you also have one of the most elaborate dry fire setups out there.
It definitely did not always it was not always that this way. And like, I only started posting a lot of videos when I had the space. And so, yeah, I don't know. I think from the beginning, when I first started, I did not have a budget to spend on ammo. I shot for the first like 3 years, I shot like 50 rounds a week, and then the rest was dry fire. And so dry fire has always been, it's been the primary training. It still is primary training, even though I shoot a lot more now. And so I don't know. I think it's where we figure things out and refine stuff. And then, so when you go and shoot, then you capture feelings that you get, whether, you know, like sensations in your hand when the gun recoils, and then you capture that and you save it. And then in dry fire, you can understand what the gun is going to do in recoil so that you know, like, how to press the trigger without influencing it. And I don't know, it's dry fire is just the way to get better. And I know a lot of people like dry fire, but obviously I think it's kind of a requirement unless you can shoot all the time. And then even if you could, if I could shoot all the time, I would be missing out on stuff that I could see in dry fire. So I don't know.
That's true. I mean, everyone wants to complain to me. I hear it all the time. Well, dry fire is not fun. There's no recoil. I was like, there are times where that's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because when there's an explosion going off, it tends to hide shit.
It hides a lot. Yeah.
I mean, you take away the explosion and you get exposed.
Yeah. You might even close your eyes. Like for people, you might close your eyes when their explosion happens in front of your face. So then you can't see anything for a split second, but you can see dry fire, and then you can, and obviously like exposure to live fire helps, but I don't know. There's so much that you have to pay attention to, and so much of the sport is not shooting related as well. It's like all the stuff in between, and that stuff, like by definition, has to be done in between live firing. So
right.
It just makes sense. Yeah.
So when you, I guess since we're talking about dry fire being so important, what would you recommend for someone that's like, I don't want to dry fire? They just heard JBL said it's a requirement. Yeah, what would be their way to do? What would you say to someone like, just start doing this, start this for dry fire and watch yourself improve?
I mean, so we kind of talked about it a little bit before, but in a little bit of a different way. So I would say a couple things. And I think that the easiest thing to talk about in dry fire is a draw. And I think that that's kind of a good place to start. And I think a lot of people start there. And so don't get stuck there, but start there.
Yeah, for sure.
Because the ability to look at a place, look at a target or whatever, and put the dot or the sights on that place without thinking about it is like extremely valuable. And so that's not just a draw. That's obviously like if you're coming into a position, that's that same skill. That's your index.
Yep.
So let's put the draw as like the drill that you do. And then let's say that you should commit. You do whatever you want. But
our podcast doesn't tell people what to do.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to be that podcast.
Jacob's telling you to do it. You do it, damn it.
So let's take this as the drill, and then let's say that you do have this inner desire to get better. And this is just a place for you to put your focus for a little while. And I would say not to put a ton of pressure on your amount of time that you need to dry fire. You're like, well, I need to dry fire for an hour a day. Like, forget about that. Like, I'm going to do this thing for 5 minutes, and I'm going to do it every day. And I'm going to do it every day for 3 months. Like, that's it. I'm going to do it every day for 3 months. So I'm going to do a draw, and I'm going to look at something small, and I'm going to put the sights on that thing. And I'm going to do that for just 5 minutes. Chances are you're going to start to add other stuff to that in this process, but that's like the baseline. That's the, you must do this. And then you're going to start to see a huge jump in skill from that. And then, cause what I'm talking about here, so with the draw is the drill, but what about after a reload and then getting that index back again? And what about if you step and draw into that same spot? Or what about if you do an 8-foot movement into that spot? And then you start doing transitions and blah, 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 and so on. But let's just say default 5 minutes every single day for 3 months. Don't miss a day. 3 months. And see what happens. And take video from your first couple days.
And then
you can look at it. I have match video from my first match, and I'm like, wow, cool. I got a little better.
We just looked at footage of one of my first dry fires.
Yeah.
It was horrid.
One of my first outlaw matches. Oh my gosh. I was like, there's no way I was really that slow. I mean, it
feels
painful.
You feel so fast. Wow. But yeah, I mean, that's what I would say. And I think for myself, like, that's my default right now. If I'm not going to do a longer dry fire session, I'm going to work on my index for 5 minutes default every. And I'm going to do this instead of 3 months. I'm going to say, I'm doing this. I'm going to do this for 10 years. I'm going to do that every day for 10 years and see what happens. And I think it's a pretty good default, because then you're always maintaining, and like this connection that I have then is maintained. So the connection with the pistol and the grip and how that feels is maintained. So anyway, that's a really long answer to that, but I think that that's so valuable.
Yeah. I think that, because even if you did your index for 5 minutes, that's, you figure it takes you on the high end 5 seconds to start your par, start your draw, reset yourself, figure roughly 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So how many draws is that in 5 minutes?
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
250.
What is it?
250.
Well, there you go.
250. Yeah. So then you can, we don't have to do the math right now, but if you're listening, you can do 250 times 90, because you're going to do that every day for 3 months. That's a lot of draws.
No, I thought you were going to bring the calculator.
I thought you were going to do the math. I was like, I'm interested. Now, what is it? You just did the math with the minutes. You can't do it with this.
My phone's 50 for the podcast.
22,500.
Yeah. Yeah. And they don't even have to be, like Steve Anderson says this all the time on his podcast, because it's from mental management, but they don't have to be perfect.
They're not going to be perfect all the time. It won't be.
No. And if you make them perfect, you'll be going too slow. So just do the draw. And then when you're doing this, when you're doing this index work, whatever it may be, maybe it's a pickup off a table or something like that. Allow yourself to just pay attention to what's happening. So notice that if the dot shows up not on the spot, where did it show up? And then correct it right then. Always correct it to the spot that you were looking at. And then think about how you can fix that the next time. Like, maybe you're just going to get your left hand, or if you're right-handed, your support hand back on the gun sooner on the pickup, so that you have your grip assembled sooner, so then the dot shows up where you're looking, or whatever. Just pay attention. And some days you won't learn, you won't necessarily feel like you learned anything. And then the other days you'll feel like you learned a lot.
Yeah. I think people underestimate that when you develop something, like you were saying, the draw, something so simple, you are getting push. You're pushing the skill of grabbing a gun out of a holster to a subconscious level. That's your goal.
Yep.
Once you can do that, I don't want to say subconscious because it sounds bad, but you can do it without any bandwidth of your mind being used up drawing a gun.
Yeah.
So you free up more bandwidth to pay attention to, where's my dot? Yep. Is it not where it's supposed to be? Did the dot move when I pressed the trigger? Are my eyes moving before it? Like you're available, your mind's available to pay attention to a whole lot more things.
Exactly. I think that's what people want. They want to be able to think about, you know, the important stuff. And at a match, it's very important so that you don't have to think about like how to draw or transition or do anything. All you have to do is run a program that you've already gone through. Like in a match, we already know what we're going to do. And so all we have to do is press play on it. And that's from, you know, obviously Steve Anderson and everything, but you just execute what you've rehearsed over and over, and then that's it. So if you're going to think about anything, it's just that piece of like putting the dot where it's supposed to go.
Right. Yeah. Your only job at a match is to execute your plan. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, this is not the time to practice, although most people, and that's everyone's excuse, like, oh, I don't have time to practice. I use matches for practice.
Well, I guess you'll get really good at using matches for practice.
Yeah. that would be true. Yeah, I like that. And I like that you brought up that the index carries over into much, much more advanced skills, entering a position, even really at its base level, transitioning.
Yes. A draw is a transition from the holster to the target.
Right.
And it's very similar. Actually, other transitions are easier in a way.
Yeah, there's less involved.
But yeah, I mean, it goes very deep. Like yeah, I think that's a really good thing to have established. And that, and I should say too, because the way that I do this is with, it's written in Steve Anderson's book, Refinement and Repetition, but it's without a trigger press. And I forgot to mention that earlier on. So now everybody's going to go be doing draws and they've stopped the podcast and they're not hearing this. But that's okay. They can do whatever they want. But this is without a trigger press. So I'm ending that presentation, that index, with my finger on the trigger and prepped. So I'm taking all the slack out, and that's where I'm ending it. I'm not necessarily going to press the trigger. But I'll do that too, but not all the time. You know? And that's just so that you're not like clicking the trigger out of sync of what you see, because you want to connect what you see to the trigger as well, because that's obviously important no matter what you're doing. Anyway, I feel like that's a pretty
it's changing the goal. Everyone's goal is like, I need to get my gun out and press the trigger in under a second. No, you need to get your gun out on target acceptable in under a second, then press the trigger. People think the trigger press is the goal. No, your acceptable sight picture should be the goal.
Yes. And once you can do that really quickly, and then try and figure out what you can get away with, like see what you can get away with on the draw by pressing the trigger, what you thought earlier would be too soon, and see what happens. See what you like, process that and try and dry fire, try and live fire and stuff like that. But yeah, then you start to push the limits on it. But I don't know. It's a really good place to start because it's always going to help you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I 100% agree with that.
Yeah. That's where I was struggling for a while. And like being truthful with your actual sight picture.
Well, actually, That's a good thing to bring up because you're like a lot of people. Especially people that already kind of know how to shoot, and I say that in quotes, when they go, oh, yes, I can hit this piece of paper. Like, no, can you hit that dot on the piece of paper? or can you hit it in this time?
Yeah.
Well, now all of a sudden that starts to change because we need to know what we can get away with. And the people that are perfectionists.
I mean, me included with that. Like, anyway, continue.
No, go ahead. You're a perfectionist?
Yeah, I want, and I started out this way, and still breaking this is really hard, of breaking the thing of, like, I'm afraid to miss. And being afraid to miss is, like, that's not helpful in this game. This game rewards speed a lot.
And it's a hindrance. It's so far from helpful.
Yeah. So, like, it's cool, it's fine, it's really safe. But it's not going to put you at the top of matches. Like, you're not going to win by being afraid to miss.
And it that's the same thing with skill building. I just had this conversation with a student. Same thing. Perfect example. You said afraid to miss. Mm-hmm. That's what his thing was. He goes, no, I have to be accountable for all the shots because of his job. Hey, cool. We're not on the job right now. You're training. Yep. Well, that's as fast as I can do it and be accountable. Really? How do you know that?
Yeah.
How do you know that's as fast as you can go?
Yeah.
You can't give me the answer because it's repeatable. So you don't know if you can go faster.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a perfect example. And especially if someone has, I mean, for myself, I have 50 rounds I'm going to shoot this week. Or whatever it was, maybe, yeah. Why would I miss one of those rounds? Why would I shoot a miss? And it's like, okay, hold on. Because, a lot of my training early on was hitting stuff. And I think that's a really good skill to have. I think it's the skill to hit things and hit what you want is a really good skill to have. But as soon as you can, like, just go faster. And so a lot of my training is telling myself, and reminding myself to go faster and miss, like, in live fire, and just process what happened, like, see what happened. And then in dry fire, I'm a lot of the times I'll come into a target if I'm entering and I'm pushing speed, and I'll shoot a Charlie, and then I'll shoot an Alpha, and then I'll make up the Charlie. And again, in this sport, with the factors the way they are, that shooting Alpha Charlie would have been better. Like, making up a Charlie in minor, on factors that we have at, like, a 7 or 8 factor is not worth it. Like, you just shoot the Alpha the first time, or leave the Charlie Alpha that you shot. But so anyway, I'll tell myself in training, like, go faster so that Charlie then, so that I'm pushing so hard that the first shot is a miss, and then I have to come back over and shoot 2 Alpha. So that, like, so my rules for myself in matches is that I only make up misses.
Okay.
That's helped me a lot. So, like, I only make up misses. Because, and that gets me to really pay attention as well. So, like, anyway, but that's me. That's a me thing. I think everybody is different. And a lot of people are biased on the speed side. Like, where they're just going wild. Yeah. And that's, like, I'm a little bit jealous because that's kind of cool.
That's me.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you, and I'm very jealous of him as well. And he has told me several times, like, I don't care what your hits look like. I want you to get your gun on the target and move your ass as fast as you can and go. Like, right now, just go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it took me a few times of doing that and seeing the scores and, like, seeing the exact same stage. My normal pace, slow and steady, Alphas all the way, versus, like, really putting a hustle in and dropping some Charlies and scoring leaps and bounds better than I did on my normal pace just by going faster. And it took me a couple times of, like, seeing that same pattern at, like, practice nights and outlaw matches to go, oh, so I do need to actually move faster to place better.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you'll see the separation in just on practice score at matches, where you'll see there's only a few people hanging in the top time, and then there's a big time drop off. And I think a lot more people would be capable of hanging in the times that are higher if we let go of that that piece and just, I don't know, trusted the skill that we have and I don't know. And we can only do that in training first. So we figure out in training where we're like, oh, wow, I can get away with a lot. So a lot of my training now is just finding out what I can actually get away with. And then giving myself permission to actually get away with that same stuff at matches.
I think it's the giving myself permission thing that like hits the nail on the head. Like you have to allow yourself to say it's okay to have a non-alpha score. Like it's okay.
Yeah. And in fact, better a lot of the time.
Right.
Because, and not even saying like that Charlie's better than an alpha, but you're still gonna, you are gonna be able to, like, you're not, it's not guaranteed that you're gonna shoot a Charlie. Like, you're probably still gonna shoot an alpha, but you're gonna do it on entry a half second sooner, just in one position. And so it's a very interesting thing. And it's funny because there, you know, for a long time, there's a fear of missing. And that's the default for me. You know, if I get really, really nervous, that's where I go. And that works out well score wise a lot of the times. But I think it's changing that, and giving yourself permission to go for it. Cause like what's the worst that's going to happen? Like you shoot a miss and you end up with the same score that you would have shot shooting a careful, literally.
Right.
Actually, you and I are a pretty good example of how, you know, you said this sport is speed biased. Perfect example. He's always been a more accurate shooter than me.
Yeah.
I was just willing to go, oh, I can shoot faster, right? That's going to be cool. All the cool guys are shooting fast. I'm going to shoot like them, and my scores would be better. Right off the bat,
drive me crazy. Oh my god, it would drive me crazy.
Yeah, you guys have a good opportunity here. You can help each other. This is good.
I didn't say she was more accurate now, Jay. I said she was. don't listen to this.
No.
I've had enough of this.
All right, we're done.
Done, click. Had enough of this show. All right, so your live fire practice, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
What's it look like for you? Because I've heard, I'll tell you the rumors that float around for the Jay Beal. I don't know if you hear them.
I don't know. I think I know where you're going with this, but maybe not. I don't know.
So there are rumors that Jay Beal will go out and have a goal, and he will set his practice up, and he'll get what he needs to. He'll do his build drill. If he got all the information out of that, that's it. He did one build drill for practice.
Yeah, so I've done that.
Rumors.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Sure. I mean, I've gone out. I went out one time a couple of years ago, and I shot one shot. I was like, "Cool, I'm done." Like,
the rumors are true. Damn it.
One. And I've gone out before and shot a build drill and been done. Now for the past, I mean, last year and this year, I'm shooting a lot more volume, and so I won't stop myself, if that makes sense. But yeah, ton more volume in the last couple of years. But.
And do you feel like you got like adequate readings from your one shot and done and your one build drill and done? Like that was the goal and the intent of that particular session. You got all the readings you needed from that one thing.
Yeah. And it was probably because I put so much value in every round that I fired. And I think having the ability to shoot more, I've put less value. And so when I was really careful about and very observational, and I still try to be, I mean, that was really, it was really good. And I think that the benefit to just shooting more is that you get the timing down more. So you understand the timing of the recoil and everything. And then before you, it's hard to get that without shooting a lot.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're going into your large ammo sessions that you have different types of goals now set out for yourself than when you did have a very strict ammo budget?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Like, I go into my live fire feels more like now my live fire feels more like my dry fire does, where I'm okay experimenting a little bit more, which has been really good. But before that, I would set out exactly what I was going to do and then kind of just see what happened with it. And then I would know that I would be done. And both are very good. And I even now, I mean, like I say that I shoot a lot of like large volume. I mean, I keep track of the rounds I shoot, and I have a session over there that's 40 rounds. So I shot 2 mags. And I got what I needed out of that. And then there's a session over there that's also 400 rounds. So it's like, okay. So I don't know. I think that there's good to both. You know,
and you want to dive into those? Like when you did your 40 round session, what was it like? Walk me through it. What made the 40 rounds good? Like that was it.
I mean, so I, the beginning of that session was to check zero. So I confirmed zero on the red dot, made sure it was zeroed. And then I did, people will be familiar with like practical accuracy, where I think of it like timing the shot. When the dot comes back down on the target, you just time the trigger press to when the dot comes back down. So it just bounces. And it's very controlled. It's not like, there's no pushing the speed necessarily on that. Like the sight is just telling you when to press the trigger. Right. And so then I did that for, so it'd be three sets. So 6, 12, 18, like with a draw in between. So 18 rounds on that. And then the other mag was like on zero, and I checked it a few different distances. And so from that, I was like this, I don't remember. I'd have to look exactly on that session, but I either saw something that confirmed that I was doing something correctly, or I saw something that showed me that I needed to make an adjustment. And one or the other, I felt like I could make the adjustment in dry fire. And so then I did. Or if I didn't need one, then I was like, this is cool. Like, I don't need to shoot anymore right now. Or it might have been like, my wife texted me and was like, hey, can you do this thing, like I mean help with the kids or something like that, who knows. But yeah, I don't know.
Your 400 round session, does that look like a single target, a series of targets, or are you like straight up setting up stages and running around like a madman?
I mean, it could be all of those things. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It might only be one target, and it might be a big stage. I'm giving really vague answers here, but it's just all over the place. Like I practice things that I feel like I need to work on. And sometimes it's just the shooting portion. So just doing like doubles or practical accuracy, or those in strong hand and weak hand versions, or it's me trying to, you know, putting those skills together on a stage and running that stage. Maybe it's the same way every single time, or maybe it's changing it every single time. It's all over the place. It's decided ahead of time. I still decide what I'm going to do ahead of time, but but I want to practice everything that the sport requires, and I want to practice everything all the time. So I really try to avoid getting in the same routine of like I'm setting up one target and I'm shooting doubles every day. Mm-hmm. Like I'd like to avoid that. It's really a fun one to get into because it's really simple. Like you always know what you're going to go do, but you'll get hung up. You won't make progress that way. So.
You're very like strategic and methodical, and obviously you looked over to your right. You said, "Oh, this session had 40 rounds. This session had you know, 400 rounds. Do you keep a dry fire log on things that you've noticed and see and want to work on, whether it's dry fire or live fire?
Yeah. Yeah. I, so if people are familiar with Lanny Basham and mental management, Lanny Basham is, he wrote the book With Winning in Mind. He wrote a couple others, and his children have written books as well. But With Winning is my in Mind is the book that I'm thinking of. And in there, he talks about a performance journal, and then obviously now mental management sells a performance analysis journal. But this is where I record dry fire sessions. And in those, I'll record really briefly what I did in the dry fire session, and then I'll record what I learned. And that's the big thing. Like, what did I do? What did I learn? And then there's another section for what I did well. But I'll record all that stuff. And it's really brief. It's like a sentence or two for every session. Also, because I don't want to keep buying mental management journals. So it's really brief. And then I'll record that stuff. And I won't put too much thought into it. Like, writing it down is enough. And then I'll go back and I'll read through stuff. Not necessarily from the same day, but like, it's fresh, it's opened up on my table over here. And so I'm looking at that. I know what I did that week, and I know what I need to address. And if I need to address it specifically, I'll write it down on a separate note that's just stuck up over there on, like, here's this block of stuff that I need to work on. And then I'm reading a journal from 3 years ago. So then I'll go back and I'm looking at this journal from 3 years ago. I'm reading it, reminding myself of stuff that maybe I need to revisit or stuff that I already know that I'm good at doing, and just being like, oh, right, I'm good at that. So then I will give myself permission to do that in the future.
Nice.
But yeah, I don't know. The journaling thing isn't something I always did, but I always, early on, I would always, I really like checking stuff off. I don't make lists though, but I like checking things off. Like, I like marking things down. My wife and I both like good track of things.
Okay. I like it.
I did try journaling for a short time, but it ended up turning out to be where, like, when I was done with my session, I'd take my belt off, I'd go grab a snack, and I'm like, oh shit, that's right, I gotta write that down. And then I'd eventually make it back and be like, what the hell did I do today?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if you don't do it, like, right away, it loses its power, I guess.
Yeah, that's why I keep it super simple, super short. And I used to write for a lot longer, and it was that was happening. So I was like, oh, I need to simplify this in some kind of way. So super, yeah. Very, very to the point on, like, you know, when I do this on the draw, this happens. I want that to happen. Yeah.
Okay. There's an aspect of your training that we need to talk about. Sure. That,
let go!
It's a little, we'll call it obscure.
And yeah.
People are starting to question Jay Buehler's sanity. They're wanting him to blink in videos if he's doing this against his will. All sorts of things. So, in case you haven't seen it, this gentleman, the psycho, has decided to spread out Legos on his floor and run across them barefoot and dry fire.
Yeah. Well, the first thing that's
not just
So,
yeah.
How are your ankle nubs?
Well, there's a.
Do you have feet left?
There's so many things. I should say that. The first benefit that I noticed is that Instagram does not flag the videos that have Legos in them.
Fantastic.
Like, so I'm like, oh, like, they don't pull in when, cause I'm sure you guys have had it happen or have heard about, but you know, they'll like, they'll flag posts that, and they'll say that they can't show your content to, others, or can't be, it doesn't push your content. And then they'll,
it's not showing up randomly. The people already have to follow you.
Yeah. So then they're like, well, if you want your content to show up, you have to delete these 5 videos or edit them or whatever. So it'll pull 5 videos or 4 or 3 or whatever. And none of the Lego videos have ever been pulled. But any other video totally gets pulled. And funny enough, a lot of my subscriber video gets videos gets pulled, which is funny because it's like, anyway, so that's kind of the first benefit, that's a side benefit that I noticed. And then the other thing is that, like, I run barefoot.
I've seen in the snow outside.
Yeah. And this is something that, like, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. So my feet are definitely in good condition to step on Legos. So people don't know that, which obviously, like, it makes a big difference if your feet are acclimated to stepping on things. So it doesn't hurt that much.
But your feet are like Tony's hands, basically.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, they're callous. it's like callous on them. Yeah. So it's not that wild. But I was a joke at first because I did a video that was stepping on like little wooden blocks a while ago, and someone was like, "You should do it on Legos," and I was like, "That's a good idea."
It's the only person to actually think that. No one else says that in their mind. That's actually a good idea.
It's a great idea. Also, I'm totally trolling. And a couple people specifically that I won't name have brought up the video being, or like, why I continue posting them is because I think that it annoys them. So that's why I'm doing it. So because people don't realize it's a joke. People don't realize it's a joke. I'm like, I'm making a joke here. So I like to continue that if I can. So.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many people have talked to me and been like, "You think there's a real benefit to this? Like, please don't."
Oh no, what you have to tell people is, I mean, you have to try it. If you want the benefit, you gotta do it yourself.
I mean, they gotta be in the comments in your videos, because I've seen them other places. Have you seen what people are coming up with? Like, he's doing it so he's hyper focused in any condition. He's like,
they're coming up with the whys.
You don't have to read in too much. I think that it helps. Like, I'm trolling, and then so I'm posting the videos, and it's fun. I want to have fun, you know. But yeah, I don't know. I was thinking for a little while. I was like, this is interesting mental training. But there are more efficient ways to do the same thing. So, like,
yeah, there's definitely some mental stuff. You were clearly on your way to be the David Goggins of the shooting world. I'll tell you that.
No, I've got like three more videos that I have already pre-made, and then as you can see over here, I picked up the floor. The Legos are put away, kind of, but they can be dumped out at any moment. But I've got some more videos on the way, so I got some good ones.
Fantastic.
I'm here to tell you how to take it up a notch, sir. If I don't see a video with thumbtacks.
I was just going to ask if he was going to do some like low ports so his elbows and knees are stuck in the elbows in the Legos.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good. I'm doing a prone.
Like prone?
I have a prone one ready to go, yeah.
Nice. Oh, I can't wait. Cool.
But yeah, I'm not going to do like thumbtacks or jacks. Jacks would be bad. Actually,
oh, that would be really bad.
But yeah, jacks and I don't know. Also, it damages the Legos a little bit if I do it on the concrete. Like they slide around and then they scrape off the good Lego. Like you want Lego pieces to be able to put together. And like, obviously, my son and I are building Legos. So,
Man, these are things that you would never know. Like, did you know that you probably shouldn't step on the Legos on concrete? It's not advised.
Yeah, they're slippery too.
Not for the longevity of the Lego.
Yeah. Not good for the longevity of Lego, but yeah, I'm trolling the internet, and it's really funny. I like to see people's comments because they're pretty funny. There's some really good comments.
There are. I love it. So, however long you need to keep doing it, by all means, go ahead.
Yeah, it'll only
be I love it
for the Legos' sake. It'll only be a few more, but that won't stop, that won't stop me from running barefoot or whatever because I like that.
Yeah, that there's actual benefit to.
I think so. There's like a whole bunch of stuff. I don't know. They've done like tests on people's blood versus like when you're grounded or when you're not. And I forget the specific way that they did it, but it was different with the pH in your blood changed. So it's more alkaline when you're grounded and more acidic when you are non-grounded. And I think they did this in a bath that had a ground wire going to it and then without a ground wire. And they tested blood before and after of the same thing. But that could be totally unofficial and totally bogus information, but I'm going to go with it.
It's okay. You're not people that may not have fallen you. I'm sure I'd be willing to bet that your follower count has jumped post Lego post.
Yeah. That helps. The Legos help.
So for the people that don't know, you're actually not foreign to pushing your body. Like you said, you run bare feet.
Yeah.
But you also do very cold plunges.
Yeah. Yeah. Every day. Yeah. The first thing I do in the morning. And every day I go, I have my ice, my freezer over there filled with water and ice. First thing I do in the morning, get up, go in there. It's the last thing I want to do. So I figured it should be the first thing I do.
Everything else for the rest of the day should be easy then.
Yeah. It's the hardest thing I do every day. It's like 35 right now, 35 degrees. So to keep it from forming a ton of ice, I don't want a ton of ice up. But sometimes,
technical reason.
Sometimes I'll lower it and then build up some ice because ice is scary. Like ice in water that you have to go into is scary, and it's good to be a little afraid sometimes. So I don't know that when I'm talking about like more efficient ways to do mental training, that's much more efficient. Like running around on Legos. It damages the Legos and it's slippery and it's not great. So, but there's plenty
of well, it damages the Legos. Anybody else would go, it hurts. Don't do it. It damages the Legos. He says,
but I mean, there are so many people posting their ice baths on Instagram. So I figured I will not be one of those people. I'll just do it occasionally. I'll post it occasionally.
I think it's good for people, especially like we don't have space for a plunge, but we're in an area of the country where I take cold, very cold showers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm right there with you. And I think more people should do it. And, the shooting world is catching up with, some of that stuff and the benefits of it.
Yeah.
But as a sport, we're still kind of archaic. We're still catching up, but
yeah. But the
shooting sports definitely don't follow your traditional athletic programs, diets, regimens, practices.
No, it's funny. It's funny.
But you're seeing that change.
Yeah.
The top guys. I mean, you're a rather athletic fellow. And actually, if you watch Eric Griffel's old videos, you're like, oh, this just looks like your average male. And as he's progressed through the years, you look at Eric now, Eric is very fit.
Yeah, a specific choice to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. And you see it with a lot of the top guys. I mean, look at Christian, JJ. You're starting to see, like, it's not just shooting. It's not doing the other stuff better. Now we're adding in the added boost of athleticism.
Yeah. Like if people were getting paid a lot more to do this, we would have seen that jump earlier. It's just 100%. That people are not getting paid what other people in other sports get paid. Like no one's getting seriously paid in this sport. Like a couple people are.
You can count on one hand.
Yeah, totally. Like a couple fingers on one hand. And I don't know. It's interesting. It's pretty cool. But yeah, I like to see it. I mean, Joey Sauerland's another one who he's come up really fast and he's starting to do the cold plunges and stuff. He's got a really nice setup with that. And obviously I think he's a trainer of some kind. I don't know. He works hard and does a lot of stuff. But yeah, cold water is very powerful. It exposes who you are immediately to yourself. You can't hide there. And that's why I think it's like some of the most effective mental training, because you get to understand who you are very quickly and abruptly, and you get to figure out ways to overcome that in a very short amount of time. So like, you know, you step in the cold shower, you turn the water on cold or whatever, and it takes your breath away.
Yeah.
Immediately. And then you have to make a decision right then on if you're going to get out, if you're going to like shy away from the cold water, or if you're going to lean in. And it happens very fast. And so that, I mean, I get goosebumps talking about it, not cold goosebumps, but like, you know, that's like static.
Mind state. Yeah.
And because it's so powerful. And so I don't know. It's very interesting.
I still remember the very first cold shower I ever took. One of the few times I willingly got up at 5 a.m. And it was weird. I started to like hyperventilate. Like, why is this happening? Like, it's just water.
Just from water. A guy that loves cold.
And it was like, and I'm like, what is going on? And then I started reading more and more into it, and it's just a regular thing now.
I think the first few times I took a cold shower, like it just like I was just like my whole body was shaking, shivering, hyperventilating, and like him telling me, when you do it, you have to breathe. Like you have to like yeah. Like how, what am I gonna not breathe? I'm like, oh my God, I need to remember to breathe. Like, and it was very hard. And actually, that was when I first started doing like the box method breathing for like meditation and things like that. Was after I started doing the cold showers, because I started realizing how much power the breath holds.
Oh, totally. And so that would, I mean, that's a big change. Well, yeah, no, I think it was a big change in my make ready on stages too, where the breath comes in, and you talked about it earlier, where you're. And a lot of people do it just naturally too, where they take a big breath in and then let it out. And I think the breath has, because it's something physical that you can take control over, but it's also something that runs in the background. And so you can take control of it anytime you want. And taking control of it is much better than just holding your breath, which is, I think, what I used to do, is just be like, I'm make ready.
And, yeah.
And so you taking control of that, like it's a physical thing that you can do to take a breath in and then out, and it calms you down. And so like before I get into the cold, it's a breath in. Like I take control before and then maintain control when I get in. And then I don't know, there's so many, I don't know, it's very cool. But also it has to be voluntary. Like you can't make someone go into the cold water. Like, because that's right. Terrible. and they won't, they'll be like, yeah, that's horrible, it's awful, and so then they won't do it again. So yeah. Right. I don't know.
Yeah, so 2 out of 3 recommend highly. 3 out of 3 recommend you should do it. Just Jackie's just not a fan of it.
Well, I have like super low blood pressure, so I am cold. If it's not like 80 degrees outside, I'm freezing.
Yeah.
So I'm always cold in the first place. So like the same temperature water, he's like, oh yeah, this is pretty cold. And I'm like almost dead. So it was physically very, very hard. When I did, was it the 5-minute cold shower every day for 30 days? And I did that a few times. It was like the hardest thing that I think I've ever had to do, like mentally and physically, to like make myself do it 5 minutes in the cold stream every single day.
Yeah, 5 minutes. Sure. That's intense.
Yeah, it was very, very cold.
Yeah. I don't do a timer anymore. I just get out when I feel like I could stay in for longer. Yeah. Like as soon as I feel like I could stay in for longer, I get out. Sometimes it's a minute, sometimes it's 2 minutes, sometimes it's 30 seconds, like whatever. I don't know. Yeah.
As soon as you get that level of comfort.
Yeah. Then it's like, I better get out now. It's time.
Yeah.
I would agree with Tony. 3 out of 3 recommend the ice bath or cold shower.
Yeah. Try it. I don't know. It's interesting. Yeah. And doing it, like you said, for a longer period of time is kind of cool too. I don't know. We've turned this into a cold exposure podcast, which I like. I would listen to this podcast.
Yeah. Again, this is just, this would be no different if you and I and Jackie went out after a match and got a meal and had drinks or a cigar. This is exactly what we'd be talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's the same thing. So I guess kind of the last training question, what do you recommend for people? And I don't know if it works for you. How do you go about creating a routine for you? Do you have a routine, or is it really just off the wall? I know you plan, because I know you have plans going in, but how do you do that? How do you make a plan?
So it's different now than it used to be. And I'll kind of briefly talk about both. But when I first started, I really wanted a routine. Like, I wanted something fixed. And I think a lot of people want that. They want like something that they can just do that they know will make them better. And I think that's okay to want that, and that's good. And I'll say for that, like, I just did Steve Anderson's drills. I just did them for 5 minutes per drill. I did all the drills. And I did that every day. And so that took about an hour every day. And so that's Steve Anderson's refinement and repetition book. But if you listen to his podcast enough, then he'll like dribble out all of the drills and you can just write them down if you want to pay whatever. Or actually you could pay $12, and then Steve Anderson has all of them on the, on his insider thing. I think he's got his insider program or whatever, his subscription. You could pay one time $12, and then you can get Steve talking about him. And then I think I have videos on there of going through each drill. It's like a couple minute video going over each drill and how to do it. But anyway, those drills for me was like the structure at the beginning. Like, I know what I'm going to do every day. I'm going to do them in dry fire. At that time, I wasn't really much live firing much. It was once a week or whatever. But at the same time, allow that to evolve. And that's what I did. And so that's evolved now, where I know I have a structure to fall back onto, where I can do a default, like, I'm going to do this drill for 5 minutes and then I'm going to change the drill. But then I also have, it's very much based off of what I want to work on and what I want to get better at. And so that's where my list comes in handy. Where I have written on a board, like, things that I need to work on. And I might have a theme where, you know, I've noticed something in a match video. And for me, as an example right now, like, it's shooting on exit. And so it's exiting positions, but it's not just like what you think of as you shoot a target and then you move, but it's like falling out and leaving on targets that might be more challenging, or that I might think that scares me a little bit. And so that's where I'm just gaining comfort there, just shooting on exit. And that's kind of a theme. So I'm going to revisit that a few different times in dry fire and live fire and stuff. But then as this list evolves, as I dry fire, things pop up and I let that kind of be pretty free flow on what it is. And so I guess that's what it was a while ago, and then kind of how it is now.
Okay.
The evolution.
Yeah.
I like that. I honestly, I do the same thing, because I have refinement and repetition. If it's I feel the need to practice, but I'm not sure what to practice on, start 1 through 12.
Yeah. Yeah. And those drills get you tuned up quick. Like, if you want to dial in gun handling stuff, those drills do a really good job. Like, you start to feel like a really good connection with the gun after doing those drills for a couple of weeks or whatever.
Yeah. I think starting out, if people followed that, I do think that's the best starting point. once you have the foundation there and you shoot your first three or four matches, you can look, it does not take long to identify your own weakness.
No. No.
Once you have the foundation, again, work on the draw and stuff like that, knock in some reloads, you'll be able to tell, like, I really need to work on reloads on the move, or I need to work on getting my gun up sooner. Like, the weaknesses become very apparent very quickly.
Yeah. And especially if like, I think I did this, but I delayed going to my first match because I was like, I want to get good first. Like, you don't have to do that. Like, you accelerate yourself so much more if you understand what you need to do. Plus, you're going to meet people who are into the same thing immediately. And yeah. So, I don't know, a lot of people probably find this on YouTube or find, you know, practical shooting on YouTube, and they're like, cool, I wonder how I do that. And then they're like, well, I'll just practice and get good first, and then I'll find out how I do that. It's like, just go and do it.
Yeah. You don't get a basketball scholarship before you go and hit the hoops next to your house.
Yeah.
Do you prescribe to the method of training where it's like accuracy, repeatability, and pushing speed? Do you have them like divided up like that?
I think I probably did at some point. I mean, just because I started out listening to Steve Anderson, I think that, and maybe so tell me if it's the same or not, but like his speed mode, accuracy mode, and then match mode. Is that what
I guess that would be, yeah. I don't know too much on Steve based off that book. So
yeah, I'm just thinking of, like, you know, so in accuracy mode, like, all you're thinking about is how to hit the target.
Like, yeah, that. So it would be the same thing. Yeah. Like, 100% accuracy no matter what. I'm going to push the speed, don't care about accuracy, or, you know, the repeatability would be match mode. Like, I want to be able to do this at my pace.
Same thing. So, yeah, I think it's really valuable because a lot of the times you'll be training and you're like, oh, that was fast, but I had a miss. Or you'll be like, well, that was really accurate, but like, that was really slow compared to my friend. And so you're like, what am I supposed to think about? And if you're able to define for yourself what to think about and what to kind of work on, then it helps a lot. I mean, I'm just thinking about if you're trying to get more accurate and shoot better groups, then like, to not, don't worry about the time. Like, start in dry fire, like, take as much time as you want to press the trigger and just see what happens with the dot. And then the same in live fire, just take as much time as you want, press the trigger really slowly and smoothly and do all that. Like, forget about everything else, and get accurate. And I think as we get better and better, then you start to combine both for sure. And kind of break the system that you thought you had before by going really fast and kind of, cause so then you're finding that, I always think of it like they call it, I guess it's an edge of a blade. It's a blade's edge, razor's edge of some kind. And you want to like train on that edge so that you're not like falling off one side and not learning anything. So like, there's a balance to it. On the realm that you train, so you can't train in like stupid mode. Stupid mode is not like a valid training area for a long period. Stupid mode would be like you don't see what's happening at all. And actually, Ben Steger just put out a decent video on his YouTube about this, where it was just like he escalated up through that, like really, really accurate, and then he bumped up the speed a little bit more. He's like, this is more match pace.
Yeah.
More. So this is exactly it. And then he went into stupid mode. He didn't call it stupid mode. But there's this balance, and there's an optimal training zone, and there's an optimal competing zone. And they're pretty close, but the training zone is just pushing it a little bit more so that you see what's happening so that you can correct stuff. Stupid mode can be fun, but like, it's just fun for a second, and then leave it there. Otherwise, it just becomes a waste of ammo or a waste of time.
Well, one of the biggest things I've really learned recently is when it comes to competing, you should never be at 100% ever on a stage, ever. Yeah. You know, that's, you know, you should strive to be, get your skill to the where you're operating at 85. 85 is your normal. If you have to push it up a little bit, it's there, but you never want to be at 100. 100 is too far.
Yes. Okay. So if I'm understanding, because the way I think about it as I think about, so in training, I would train, but I'm thinking if you're training at 100%, or so let's say what's your training percentage? What would that be? So if you're training to get better on the razor's edge there, like the optimal training, not in a match, but like in practice.
Because you're not pushing at 100%
in a match. To me, I'm usually pushing myself, whether it's I'm shooting on a tighter partial than normal, so I have a higher standard of accuracy versus a normal regular tuxedo. Mine will be a little skinnier, or at the speed at which I can do, like trying to get away with where does everything fall?
Yeah.
But when matches are coming up, I dial it back to where I want to be able to do something repeatedly all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're like training at 100% and then matches are like at that 85%, 90% range. That's what your understanding of the percentage would be, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm just thinking that I've now realized that my percentage scale is totally different, but what we mean is the exact same thing. So I'm competing at 100%, but I'm training at 120.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. We mean the same thing.
Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing. I'm just thinking.
You don't go into the match, balls to the wall, but that's how you train.
Yeah, totally. I train totally wild, but just at the wild part that I can see what's happening.
Right.
With or without the Legos.
With or without Legos. Like, it doesn't matter. The Legos are just a, I like to think of it like there are definitely more people looking at it, so they might be like, what are you doing? And then they might look at my profile and see that I do competitive shooting, and then they might check it out.
Yeah.
But probably the turnover on that's like a tiny percentage. But if I want to think that I'm being useful, I'll just think about that.
So now that we're back to the Lego thing, I'm sure most of the people that listen to the podcast have already seen it. For those who haven't seen it, someone who wants to connect with you, where can they find you online, social media?
Yeah. I'm on Instagram mostly. I've totally almost abandoned Facebook. And I post some stuff. I post my match videos on YouTube, but I'm on both of those. You'll be able to find me if you search my name, Jay Beal. I'm on Instagram's jclay94. And if you want serious content where my verbal journal is, then that would be on my Instagram. You can subscribe for like $5 a month. Or if you wait, sometimes I post it where it's like $2 a month. Then you just subscribe. And it's a lifetime thing, but I'll let you know. I'll let people know. Anyway, I have a ton of content on there with just a lot of my raw footage from training. I'll voice over. And just talk about what I'm seeing, what I'm learning. And then a lot of times after matches, I'll do a video where I just kind of break everything down in a simple way. And a lot of it's just for my reference to go back on. But anyway, that's where you can find me. And if you want serious non-Lego content, though, some of the Lego content has creeped onto the subscription thing, but anyway,
as it should.
Yeah, there's like 7 minutes of running around on Legos on there. But,
Well, man, thank you so much for coming on. We've been trying to do this for a little bit.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Really, this was fun. I was like, I was gonna say a while ago, like we should. It's been a while, but it was so much fun, so we kept on going, and it was good.
Yeah, Yeah, this is this. I think this will be our longest episode.
Oh yeah. No!
No, it's a good thing. There's a lot in here, and
a lot of good information, and you don't have to subscribe to hear all these what great gems.
That's true.
Yep.
The
now, you should subscribe.
Yes. We're gonna have to have you back on, man, because there's after this season, I think there's gonna be some big things. So,
yeah,
you got a lot of majors planned.
Yeah, a few coming up. Karyoptics Nationals is in June again, so kind of a decent amount of stuff before that, and then not much after. But yeah, going down to South Carolina in a month or so, and then a whole bunch of stuff after that. But it's good.
Nice. Cool. Well, we're going to have you back on, man. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, guys, if you need to reach out to Jackie or I, it's at Laugh Mode on any of the social medias, pewtimepodcast@gmail.com. And any of the stuff we have on the website, laughandload.com. Dude, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. This was a ton of fun, and I can't wait till next time. And hopefully we'll run each other in a match soon.
And not have to wait until SHOT Show next year.
Right.
Yes. Hopefully match. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk to you.